Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Today's program is going to be about plate tectonics, the idea that the crust of the Earth has broken up into many plates and that these plates move and allegedly are subducting under each other. One is going under another, causing not only earthquakes and volcanoes, but those amazing ocean trenches. To talk about this, we have our favorite scientist with a PhD from MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Dr. Walt Brown. Walt, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Good to be back with you, Bob.
Well, in your book titled In the Beginning, Walt, you have a table that we've linked to on the internet over the years. It's so fun, and it talks about this idea in plate tectonics where one plate moves under another. And if you heard the introduction I did I get it right that they say that this is what forms ocean trenches?
Yes.
Okay. Could we go through your table item by item and talk about the evidence that seems to suggest that, in fact, that's not what's happening? Is that all right with you?
That'll be fine.
Okay. So to begin with, you mentioned that sediments on the ocean floor, even volcanoes, they've not been scraped off. Like if a North American plate is slipping under a Pacific plate and forming these trenches that are awfully deep, then if there are volcanoes on top of the one plate, they should be scraped off along with all the sediments. Could you explain that idea?
Well, yes. They've been able to look down in the sediments under the ocean floor by seismic techniques, bouncing sound waves down in, getting the reflections off, and figuring out what's going on under there. And there is no distortion. In fact, this became very clear to me back in 1986 and 87. I met every Wednesday afternoon for 3 hours with one of the founders of the plate tectonic theory, Dr. Robert Dietz.
Wow.
And we discussed many of these items that were of mutual interest to both of us. And that was one item that I laid in front of him. And he pulled out books, one of them dedicated to him by Menard, one of the biggest names in oceanography.
H.W. Menard, who got his Ph.D. from Harvard in marine geology. So he's the right kind of guy.
Menard dedicated one of his books to Bob Dietz. And in there, we pulled off the shelf some pictures of these trenches, and there's not any distortion of any material that's jamming that sliding of a plate down under an overriding plate. It's as if you had a shovel and you stuck the shovel in the ground at, say, a 45-degree angle. Mm-hmm. That shovel is analogous to a plate that's 30 miles thick at a minimum.
Right.
There's going to be tremendous resistance.
Yes.
And even if there isn't resistance, then the point you're making, these volcanoes that litter the Pacific floor.
How many volcanoes are on the floor of the Pacific? It's not only a ring of fire, it's a basin of fire.
Oh, yeah. There are 40,000 volcanic cones on the floor of the Pacific that are over a kilometer in height.
Wow. 40,000.
So they should jam up or scrape off, but the trenches are not filled with scraped off material.
And so, Walt, for people listening who are not creationists, and they just assume that plate tectonics has to be true because that's what's taught in school, and that's what's on Nova and the Discovery Channel and National Geographic. They just believe it. So on this first item, as we go through your table, I'd like to take a little bit of time and share with the audience the kinds of sources that you include in this chapter where I think you dismantle plate tectonics.
Okay.
So you mentioned already Menard, H.W. Menard.
Right.
And let me quote, he wrote an article on this topic in Scientific American, and you have this in your book In the Beginning. He wrote that the enormous quantity of ocean sediment that has presumably been swept into the trenches cannot be detected. So it can't be found. He wrote, yet virtually undeformed sediments have been mapped in the trenches by the U.S. Naval Electronics Lab. And then I want to go to a couple other sources you mentioned. This is from the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. They have an article titled Global Tectonics, Major Inconsistencies. And this is from the Geological Society of America Bulletin by a Dr. Scholl, who's one of the guys who mapped the sediments in the trenches. And he wrote this: slippage of the oceanic crust beneath an overlying trench is unsupported by observational as well as theoretical data. And Walt, it just goes on and on. In the journal Tectonophysics, you have a quote here where it is admitted that large oceanic plateaus cannot be subducted. Such thick plateaus resist subduction, jam the trench, it just won't work. And then finally, from the Geological Society of America Bulletin, here's a neat quote, and this is from Roland von Huhn. He writes, "It is disturbing that the proposed exceedingly large movements between continents and ocean basins, especially where much sediment is involved, are not obvious." And so he says, our observational data does not work to help us interpret what we find on the ocean floor. Well, that's pretty good evidence you amass by the world's leading experts on plate tectonics that it doesn't work.
That's right. As you probably know, there are maybe 50 to 100 things that don't work. But let's keep in mind, even though we might not get to it,
right,
there is an explanation for all of that.
Right.
Plus the explanation for the things that were observed that led to the plate tectonic theory.
Right. So the hydroplate theory, which is the main feature of your book in the beginning. In fact, we have a beautiful set of CDs on the air with Walt Brown and the hydroplate theory. And so that is explained in your book. We explain it. People could look at realscienceradio.com, listen to those programs. So that's all the very first item on your list, that the sediments, the volcanoes, they've not been scraped off. You can't find them in the trenches. How about the next item, that one plate cannot even begin its dive under another plate because it just can't happen by physics. You started to describe this earlier. What are these plates like, and how would one start to dive under another?
Well, the first thing, you've got to break the Earth's crust into plates. That is a Herculean task because the Earth's crust is typically 30 to 60 miles thick. How do you break that? That takes a lot of energy and a lot of forces. But then once you have broken it, in order to shove one plate under the other, you've got to push the plate that's going to dive. You've got to push it down at least 30 miles.
Well, now, so you're talking about plates that are about 30 miles thick.
Right.
Some are thicker. So first they have to be broken, and what National Geographic would say is they'd say the heat under the crust is what broke the plates. Then they have to separate from the mantle beneath them or the MOHO beneath them. Then the one, it has nowhere to go because it's the crust of the Earth, but then the one begins to dive under the other, but you're saying they're 30 miles thick? How do you get a rock 30 miles thick to start to go under another next to it?
Well, it's got to first depress 30 miles, and that's going to leave a 30-mile high cliff on the plate that it's going to go under.
Right.
And a very simple fact is you will never see on the Earth's surface a cliff more than 5 miles high. If it were more than 5 miles high, the compressive stress at the bottom of that cliff would be so strong the pressure due to the overlying rock will crush the rock at the base of the cliff.
And that's because of the compressive strength of rock
and
the gravity of the Earth.
That's
now,
right.
You could have taller cliffs on other planets that have less gravity. So right off the bat, it seems like you have a problem with the cliff above the subduction. But then how do you take a plate that's 30 miles wide at its leading edge and start to shove it under something else? You would need what, to push it or to pull it? You got to do something.
You need to push it or pull it, but Cushing is the more likely because rock has very little tensile strength. You can't pull rock as hard as you can push it.
Mm.
It'll break. It'll crack. But the rock at the base of a cliff that is 30 miles high would have flowed so that you could never get the plate to subduct under it.
Now, with these kinds of observations, it seems to me, as I've been doing this show for all these years, that I notice from time to time that there are professional scientists, including geophysicists, who will read your book and they will publicly announce that plate tectonics is not valid. The evidence is against it, and that they've realized that the hydroplate theory explains the crust of the earth. Have you noticed that? I've noticed it.
Yes. I've gotten correspondence from people that are teaching it and are not only teaching that plate tectonics is full of holes, but they're teaching that the hydroplate theory is what they think really explains the earth's surface.
And would that be only at a Christian college?
These are not at Christian schools.
Wow. So that's, I think, a result of the hard scientific data that goes into your research.
Can you imagine the reaction of geology majors in college when they hear their professors introduce these problems with plate tectonics? Since high school, these geology majors have believed in plate tectonics.
Right.
And they are expecting to build their future professional life on plate tectonics.
Mm.
And so what typically happens is they don't check the data. They don't do the calculations. They don't come up with counterarguments. They just get angry.
Wow. They get angry because it's political correctness.
Because their paradigm, their view of the world is crumbling.
Mm.
But on a brighter note, you have in the same classes quite often technical majors, physics, engineering, mathematics, who are excited when they learn all this because the world hasn't been told it.
Oh, you're saying
that. They understand the physics.
So the geology students would be more inclined to reject this, whereas engineering students would be more inclined to see the physics of it.
Exactly. In fact, in some cases, the geology majors have walked out in the middle of the class.
Wow.
Some of the points you just raised, I have put in front of some creationists who believe in plate tectonics.
Mm.
They say, well, plate tectonics is correct because they were taught it themselves. It's been taught as the only explanation
right.
for the Earth's surface for over 50 years.
Yeah, and it's hard to throw out your whole professional
education.
When I
education. Put these questions in front of these creationists,
yeah.
they say, it's a problem. We don't understand it.
Mm.
But well, they still teach those ridiculous ideas.
Now, Walt, the speed at which these plates move, and not only are we told they create the ocean trenches through subduction, but they also create the mountain ranges.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. You've got a footnote in your book where you describe how quickly they're moving and you compare it to the rate of growth of a fingernail.
That's right.
They move about that speed.
Yes.
And so when you take the physics of that, the force available on a plate like in North America, how high up can you push mountains if they're moving that slowly?
Well, you got to look at the energy because there's kinetic energy in a moving plate. Not much because it's moving so slowly, maybe a couple of inches a year.
Mm.
But if you take that kinetic energy and say, how much of that energy would push up a plate or push up a mountain? If no friction was involved, it's so trivial you couldn't even see it. It's less than a millionth of a millionth of a millionth of an inch.
Mm.
So again, plate tectonics is believed by many geologists, but the physics doesn't hold up.
Well, how about this? You know, a scientific theory, if it's valid, it should help to explain the things you look at in reality. So when we look at the globe, we see the Pacific and that it is so different than the Atlantic.
Yes.
It's deeper. It has most of the trenches. It has those tens of thousands of volcanoes. And so your hydroplate theory explains this. But does plate tectonics give a reason for why the Pacific Ocean is so different than the Atlantic Ocean?
No, not at all.
It doesn't.
In fact, plate tectonics says that material is coming up from the mantle at ridges. Oceanic ridges wrap around the Earth
right.
like the seam of a baseball.
Right.
And then the material moves like a conveyor belt and then dives down once it gets into the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
But why would the trenches be concentrated in the Pacific, but the ridges
are everywhere,
are uniformly around the Earth?
And those ridges are about 46,000 miles long, you point out in your book.
Right.
But the trenches total only about a third of that, 15,000 miles.
15,000 miles.
So every way you cut it and you slice it, the plate tectonic theory doesn't hold up.
If you could visualize an escalator or conveyor belt on a floor, the conveyor belt comes out of the floor, one side of the room, goes horizontally, and then dives down on the other side of the room to complete the path. The width of the conveyor belt has to be about the same all the way along. Hmm. But if the conveyor belt coming out is three times wider than where it will descend under the floor, it won't work.
And you also point out the geometry of it, where if you have the leading edge of a plate and it's going to subduct under another plate, if it has an arc shape, like the cusp and arc shape of the trenches in the Pacific, you're not going to be able to push a plate under another plate when you don't have straight, uniform leading edges.
Right. If you take a paper-bound book and you hold it horizontally, grip it on both sides with your hands, and then bend one side of that paper book down so it's at a 45-degree angle with the horizontal, the bend will be along a straight line. But that same thing should be true if plates are diving into the mantle. There should be a straight line where they dive down. Mm. But they're not. Mm. They are curved. They are arc-shaped. So some other mechanism besides this downward diving has to explain it.
Right. We've only been referring to the hydroplate theory. But let me make this observation. It comes out of your book that the center of the trenches in the Pacific is on the opposite side of the globe to the center of the Atlantic.
Exactly.
And why would that be? The hydroplate theory explains that during the global flood of Noah, when the fountains of the great deep broke forth, as the crust above the Atlantic Ocean was eroding away, the subterranean chamber about 10 miles deep began to rise. And as the Atlantic rose, then the globe had to compensate. And so on the other side of the globe, the Pacific, there was no subduction going on. It was subsiding. Sinking in.
That's right.
And that helps us understand the shapes of the trenches.
Exactly.
Wow. This is exciting, Walt, that you could take God's word at face value. Whereas if you take the humanist, atheistic worldview, you could count on being disappointed.
And we got to keep in mind that we're talking about the flood of Noah's day. And the flood would have produced all that you and I are talking about, whereas plate tectonics can't even come close. Mm.
Well, how about the volcanoes? If one plate is subducting under the other, you should be able to predict where the volcanoes would lie. Do the volcanoes lie on the right side of that subduction?
The plate tectonic theory says as a plate subducts under, friction along its surface will create magma, and that magma will bubble up and produce a volcano. But if that's true, the volcano should be in the direction of the subducting plate. It turns out that the volcanoes are on the opposite side of trenches from where they should be, according to plate tectonics.
Right. And then I love your next point, and this is a little complicated, mass deficiency. If one part of the Earth's crust is diving down beneath another, then when we measure the amount of gravity in that location on the Earth, we should see that there's a lot of mass down there because you've got sort of double crust under you.
You pushed mass down under it, yes.
But instead, they find what they did not expect, but what the hydroplate theory indicates, they find mass deficiencies. There's no excess mass as they would think there would be.
And I jokingly tell people, if you're on a boat going over a trench, that's the time to weigh yourself because you will weigh slightly less because there's less mass below you to pull you down on the scale.
Well, I'll do that next time I'm in the Pacific. We've got friends in Tonga. One of the trenches is the Tonga Trench.
Yeah.
And last I checked, it's been a long time now, but a Christian monarchy in Tonga, and that's looking better and better as we go along. So, Walt, also they've mapped earthquakes with the relationship to the plates. And it seems that the earthquakes do not follow the plate boundaries the way it is predicted.
There have been a few earthquakes that occur over such a broad region that they could not be produced by a plate subducting under there. In other words, the width of the subducting plate is not as great
insufficient
as the width at which the earthquake occurred.
When they first introduced plate tectonics, you know, you go way back to Gondwana land and all that, and then Pangaea and Alfred Wegener, and then plate tectonics in the 1900s.
Did 1960, plate tectonics came in, but before that,
yeah,
with Wegener, it was about 1917 that he put forth his ideas.
With continental drift and all, and didn't they start in the 1960s with a rather small number of plates, and they keep adding plates because it's not working as expected?
Right. There were just a handful of plates, but as they've studied the Earth since then, since the 1960s, they've had to add more and more plates, usually very small plates, in order to make the theory work. Mm. Actually, the theory doesn't work, but it makes it help
right.
it work.
And I think you point out, and that reminds me of the epicycles back before the Christians, like Isaac Newton and Johann Kepler and Copernicus, before they figured out heliocentrism, back with Plato's geocentrism. They thought that the planets moved in circles, but then they could observe that that didn't work. So then they made epicycles, little circles in the big circles, and then that didn't work. And so they kept adding epicycles.
That's right.
And so they keep adding plates because it's not working. It seems to me after a big earthquake, what we would expect from the hydroplate theory is that because the Atlantic floor lifted up and the Pacific sucked in, that generally, if we did GPS monitoring of the globe, generally the continents would be creeping toward the Pacific.
Yes.
And is that what we actually see generally?
Yes, they're generally going toward the northwestern Pacific. But there are global positioning system stations all around the Earth. I have a map in the book of 150 of them. And each one of those stations can measure how the ground under it is moving, in which direction and how fast.
Yeah.
And when you look at those movements, you see they're not moving the way plate tectonics would say. They're all moving slightly differently. In other words, what should be a solid plate is moving in many different directions within the plate.
Yeah. I think it was Kevin Lee up in Port Orchard, Washington, who is a real fan of the hydroplate theory with a technical background. I saw a DVD produced on earthquakes, and he has this map where they show these GPS stations. And you could find this online, but the arrows are so small, it's like you have to really work to see where they're all pointing. It's almost as though the geologists don't like where they're all pointing because they're all pointing toward the hydroplate theory.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, that's sort of trying to psychoanalyze some guy making a chart.
But it's recognized that plates are not solid, that there are many hundreds of points within a plate that are moving in slightly different directions. So the plate isn't solid. There must be lots of fractures within those plates, and they're all moving a little differently.
How about this? When we map the Earth's surface, we also map beneath the Earth's surface through seismic tomography. When plates are supposedly subducting, shouldn't it be relatively straightforward to map those in two-dimensional and three-dimensional ways?
Yes, and I hear so often, even from creationists who believe in plate tectonics, well, don't we see plates subducting due to the seismic tomography? And what you can see in some journals is a two-dimensional cross-section of the Earth, a vertical plane passing through the Earth, and you can see a line in some cases. And they say, ah, that's a plate subducting. I say, no, that is a fault. Mm. And there is slippage along that fault. The fault is called a Benioff zone. Is a plate, there are fairly common techniques in which you should be able to get a three-dimensional picture of that thick plate subducting down.
Yeah.
They can't do it.
Yeah, you should be able to go on, you know, Wikipedia or Google Images and find the shapes of all the major subducting plates.
The way I put it, there is no unambiguous image of a plate subducting into the Earth's mantle.
Mm. The Benioff zones are named after the guy who found them, him and a coworker, and they have really pretty diagrams of them online. But you point out that, hey, these things, they don't all go in a downward fashion like they should. A number of them are just horizontal.
Yes, there's one area in particular that I can recall where the Menhoff zone goes horizontal. Well, that could be the case with a fault. But with a plate, it couldn't be, because plates are supposedly diving because of gravity pulling them down.
Mm.
So they shouldn't go horizontal.
And we only have a couple more minutes. You point out that the continents are buoyant. You know, granite, continental rock is about 15% lighter than the basalts in the oceans. So that would stop the plates from subducting. And you point out that there are places on Earth where trenches and ridges intersect. And how could that be if they're going down and coming up at the same time?
And you know who pointed that problem out to me? I didn't figure that one out.
Who is that?
Dr. Bob Dietz.
Hey!
One of the founders of the plate tectonic
theory. Founders
of
plate tectonic.
And by the way, he was named as America's outstanding geologist back in the 1980s.
Oh, wow.
He knew, and he told me he knew, there could not be circulation in the mantle. But that's what's taught in the textbooks.
All right. And then, Walt, the last thing is the fossil trenches. These leaders in plate tectonics and mapping the trenches, like Robert Fisher, one of the ones who mapped the Tonga Trench and others, he said, where are the trenches of yesteryear? Why are there no counterparts? He said, we should be able to find ancient trenches on the seafloor and even on the continents. If these things are all moving over tens of millions of years, why haven't we ever found them?
Well, let me broach a bigger subject here. If anybody disagrees with me on the hydroplate theory and the subjects we've talked about here, I'm happy to debate it with them, provided they will say ahead of time they've read the whole hydroplate theory.
Yeah.
And provided it can be public. In other words, we will have a debate, a phone debate. It can be recorded.
All right.
We'll have a moderator from an arbitrary university or college in the United States who is a debate counselor or debate coach.
Coach, yep.
And we will have a phone debate.
Well, that sounds just great. Maybe as a result of this program, maybe that will happen. Dr. Walt Brown, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bob.
What an honor. The book is In the Beginning, Compelling Evidence for Creation and the Flood. And the website is creationscience.com. So check that out, creationscience.com. Our website is realscienceradio.com. And by the way, we have a store that has the neatest products, science products, including Walt Brown's book, but just so many fabulous DVDs and debates. So check it out, and that'll help us stay on the air, realscienceradio.com. God bless you. Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, The Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart Debates Atheist Zaketh, a Psychologist, two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe, our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, kgov.com.